I want to burn that record with all the cash that was going to get burned this year because, spoiler alert, not going to happen. Your New England Patriots at best. Actually, excuse me, at worst. It's actually both, John Lyons. At best and worst. In a worst-case scenario, could finish 4-13 if they beat the Buffalo backups tomorrow in the freezy, freezy cold of the final Sunday of the regular season at Gillette Stadium tomorrow. It's hour number two of the Fitzy and program, and now I am proud to call it the Fitzy and Lyons program because joining us, he is at The Real John Lyons on the Twitter platform. Your old pal John Lyons jumps in, Mr. Football himself around here at WEEI. John, please tell me there's no way in the world the New England Patriots are going to try to make sure they win as many football games as they did last season to prove a point. And please tell me that the organization doesn't believe that they need tomorrow to finally figure out, or as a last throw, a last saving grace. Like, we haven't made up our mind on Mayo yet. We got to see how he performs tomorrow against Mitch Trubisky and, you know, Ray Davis and Kair Elam. I'm just naming a couple of Buffalo backups I'm familiar with. They better show up tomorrow, otherwise this guy's cooked.
Yeah, if they don't cover Amari Cooper well enough, yeah, he's out. Look, first of all, how about that Fitzy solo show for 12-1? That was yeoman's work by you, Nick Fitzy.
Listen, we got to do the best we can do with what we got, my friend. You've had to fill in a couple times as well, and if you think eating innings at night at sometimes can be tough. You know what, though?
The good call people us of Brennan Patriots... Bernardino. That's fine. That's fine. So, look, Fitzy, on your point, though.
Yeah.
Last year, Tom Curran came on this radio station after Mac Jones threw that interception in Germany and said they had made the decision to fire Bill. If you remember, that was right after Veterans Day weekend. So now they're going to wait until the last game of the year against backups to make a final decision if they fire Mayo or not. Like, that's the thing. I wonder, do they have an idea of where this is going already? Like, I find it hard to believe it all hinges on just this game. And right. You and I have talked about this, and I've maintained this for a long time. I felt Mayo was always going to get a second year unless it was an Urban Meyer-level disaster in year one. And I think for most of this year, it wasn't. Right. The problem...
No, it hasn't been Urban Meyer-esque. Thank you for saying that. Yeah. This hasn't been... You know, earlier, John, they played a song from David Lee Roth on the Ken and Curtis show, and they made mention of the David Lee Roth show. And I only mention it because I worked at that station, K-Rock, which became Free FM, in 2005/2006. And I saw them try to replace the Howard Stern show, the greatest talk show in FM history, with the David Lee Roth show. Whatever, you know. What's that?
Second greatest behind Fitzy and Lyons.
Second greatest behind Fitzy and Lyons.
It's fine.
Right.
You know, whatever.
And 3 months into it, they're like, nope, we made a mistake. We have to be done with this. The Gerard Mayo era. Gerard Mayo is not David Lee Roth, if you know what I mean.
Right, like, and that's what I'm getting at is originally...
100% I'm with you.
I thought that's what it would take. The problem for Mayo, though, is you have a bye week, a late bye week, by the latest bye week a team could have in the season, and you come out of it, and you play an Arizona team that's not that good, and you look awful, like uncompetitive against, again, an Arizona team that 2 years ago you went down there with the Matt Patricia-led offense and won a game on a Monday night, right? So a team that Cam Newton beat.
Kyler Murray did get hurt in that game, and it became Trace McSorley versus Mac Jones and the F-bombs.
And that's fair, but you still went down there. In this case, you're uncompetitive in this game. Then you maybe have a bit of an uptick there against Buffalo, but still, you make multiple massive mistakes, 3 turnovers in the second half, including that backwards pass fiasco that was an offensive breakdown from top to bottom. And then you come out against the Chargers and you think, hey, the Chargers, yeah, they played Thursday night football the week before, so they have a little extra rest, but they're flying across country on Christmas week. Maybe you can at least keep it close. And this is, again, a Chargers team that last year came to Foxborough in December against Bailey Zappi and the Patriots, and they only won 6-0. And then you're non-competitive against the Chargers. And I think that, to me, has kind of... I still think, unless they can get Vrabel or Brian Flores, Mayo will probably get another year. But 2 months ago, I thought there was no way he would get fired after year one. The Arizona game, I think, kind of opened the door a little bit. And the Chargers game even opened it further. And you combine all that. I mean, we just played the soundbite all the missteps and all that throughout the entire, and it goes back to January, right? It's not just him calling them soft after the Jacksonville game or whatever. It's all year long. I mean, remember Matt Judon's temper tantrum during training camp in front of all the cameras? Like,
of course I do. I was there with I was doing the midday show watching him and a couple days later jogging the hill yelling with Mayo.
Have kind of forgotten about that because there's been so many other problems this year. But, I mean, or how about Elliott Wolf saying, oh, yeah, we have a good roster and we can compete in training camp? I mean, and you can pick whatever soundbite you don't like if you're a fan, and myself included. It's like a Seinfeld episode. There's something for everyone. Right, because there's along the way, there's been so many missteps publicly, and then you combine that, especially and most importantly, with the team looking non-competitive in the majority of their games. Right, last year they had, I think, 8 losses out of 13 were one possession games.
Yeah, let me throw back real quick. Let me throw back real quick, mid diatribe friend. And this is Fitzy and Lyons on WEEI. John Lyons just tagged in to join the program. We are here for you, your grouses, your complaints, your plans to rebuild the Patriots.
Don't worry, we know our tomorrow.
People have called in. I'm not sure if you heard on your way into the station. People have called in with these well thought out. We had Jimmy in Bedford had a 90-second
plan.
It was amazing. It was very well thought out. I may make a couple of tweaks to it myself, but whew, it's been something else, and the Lyons are still loaded up, and we'll get to you guys momentarily. But you and I did a podcast on the Six Rings feed last summer talking about, hey, in a best-case scenario this year, if Jerod Mayo just continues the work of Bill Belichick, putting a slight tweak to it or some of his influence motivates the guys to play with pride and they can just tidy up the mistakes they made last year, then maybe 3 or 4 of those 8 one-score games can go in their favor this year. And you should have a team that starts the turnaround, points the ship in the right direction that we can be proud of again. So what the hell?
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. They've gotten worse from last year, but I think the other concern, Fitzy, and I was at training camp several times, you were at training camp several times, I feel like they've gotten worse since then. And that is, I think, a bigger problem. Because when you look at this team and where they're at, it's a bad roster. And the biggest reason they're not good is not Jerod Mayo. It's the roster. But what you look at is you say, okay, with a bad roster, can some guys or certain position groups get better during the year? And for my money, Fitzy, I can think of 2 total guys out of 53 that I think are significantly better football players than they were in July. One is Drake May, the other is Marte Mapu. Everybody else is either
Mapu
the same.
Mapu should be included. Yeah, you're right.
To me, everybody else is either the same or worse than they were in July. And that's the most concern, like when I think of the coaching staff, that's the most concerning thing for me. Because you and I know, like we all know, callers, listeners, everybody, the roster's bad. We all know that. But when you have a bad roster that doesn't get better, I mean, look around the league. The Carolina Panthers have a bad roster. They've gotten better during the year, right? Like a lot of these other, and you talked, I think, earlier in the show about the turnaround of the Washington Commanders. They actually have a decent roster, and they've gotten a lot better than last year. But even these teams with bad rosters and new head coaches, yep, they get better. And that, to me, is the real concerning thing, is that if you took their Buffalo Bills loss and then you took their Chargers loss back-to-back, is it really that different than their Seattle loss in Week 2 and their Jets loss in Week 3 back-to-back? One close game that you made a few mistakes and then another non-competitive game? Like, that's the thing. And the other thing, Fitzy, think about the teams they've lost to. Like, they've lost to Jacksonville. They've lost to Tennessee. They got trampled by Jacksonville.
They didn't just lose to them. They got smoked
but
by Jacksonville.
These are bad teams that they lost. Like, and they were competitive against Buffalo. I know. I get it.
For a half.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. And I'm not even, but it's just, you look through this, like, the Jets have 4 wins, and one of them is against you. Right? Jacksonville has 4 wins. One of them is against you. Tennessee has 3 wins. One of them is against you. The Colts have 7 wins, which is better, but still, one of them is against you in a game you probably should have won. Right? Like the San Francisco 49ers have 6 wins. One of them is against you. And I know they've had injuries, but they had some injuries in that game in Week 4 as well. So you've lost to teams, and especially the ones that stand out are the Titans, Jags, and Jets. Like, you've lost to teams that arguably have worse rosters than you, or at least worse situations overall, because that Jets roster is okay, but it's so dysfunctional.
It's a much better roster than the Patriots.
But it's
there's no rationale for how badly.
That's true.
How the season
but you've
was
lost to these teams.
But the season basically, if you want to say it was over, I sort of like half humorously posited at the start of the show, I blame Cincinnati for all of this, because if they had just showed up week one, they should have won easily against the Patriots, and we would have said, hey, we admire the fight and the dog, and they still got some dog in them, but that's what this team is going to be this year, and Gerard Mayo and everyone else will lower and temper expectations. We inflated them all the way through the end of that Seattle game, and still thought more of them. So by the time they got their lunch handed to them or their dinner handed to them on a silver platter, along with their jowls and the car door handle that was ripped off on the way in by the Jets on that Thursday night game, we were in a complete tailspin, John. We had no idea how the hell this could happen and what was wrong with this team. Turns out that's actually really who they were. And you know, you can't judge a team by the first 4 weeks. And as the season has progressed, we've really gotten to see how ill-prepared a lot of them were, how bad the draft was, and just what a clunky-ass roster this is.
Yeah, and I think you make a great point about that Cincinnati win, because on the surface, you're like, okay, Cincinnati's a team that's a Super Bowl contender. They have Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase. That's a great team. But as you and I know, they start slow every year. I think they haven't won a game in week one or two in like 3 or 4 years. So they start slow every year. That was a time where Joe Burrow was not 100% healthy. Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins were having contract squabbles with the team at that time. So look, the Patriots went in there and won, and it was a good win. It was. But you kind of look back on it and you say, maybe that wasn't as sustainable as they thought, because the biggest play of that game was Kyle Duggar forcing a fumble at the goal line. If he doesn't force that fumble, Cincinnati might win that game anyway.
And well, the biggest play in that game,
Joe,
you know,
Cardona
who I really blame?
Forced a fumble. Two.
You're
like,
right.
How many times is that going to happen? So, like, that's the thing. Like, at the time, we were like, hey, they ran the ball well. This is sustainable. And that part, okay, yeah, sure, you can run the ball well. But if you look at the way they forced turnovers and at the key moments, that wasn't as sustainable. And we learned that in a painful way weeks 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7.
You know who I now you've helped me reframe on Cincinnati who I blame. I don't just blame Joe Burrow for not being ready with his surgically repaired thumb. I don't just blame Ja'Marr Chase, who wasn't ready and was unhappy about his contract. I don't blame T. Higgins in the intermittently balky hamstring. I don't just blame Zach Taylor, the head coach. I also blame Mike Gesicki, because if he had held on to that damn touchdown.
I know. Well, but really, I think the Bengals probably win that game if he holds. And credit to Kyle Duggar, right? Impact play.
Yeah,
he's had a tough year, but he was an impact player that day. But that's the point, is that that wasn't that sustainable. And then even you look at the Jets win. The Jets are more talented than you, but they're so dysfunctional and they're so out of it. And that was what? That was either Robert Saleh's last game or the first game after they fired him. I think it was the first game after they fired him. So it's like they were in disarray at that point. And then Chicago, they fired their offensive coordinator the day after playing you. And then 2 weeks later, fired their head coach. Like, talk about a team in disarray. And don't get me wrong, you won the game. I give you credit. But it's just, you look at where this team is at, and I think in pretty much every metric, that, and whether it's the eye test or the numbers, not only are they worse than a year ago, but they're worse than they were in July and August and September.
617-779-7937 is your telephone number. How do you guys see things playing out tomorrow? Do you think there's any chance in the universe the Patriots win? What is your plan to fix the Patriots? Everything is open, available, on the table, and beyond with Fitzy and Lyons here on a cold, crisp Saturday afternoon on WEEI. Speaking of things cold and crisp, that's how he delivers his trending sports news. Here's Tom Cristofulli. Ah, so many favorites, so many young thunders, so many burn some cash. If only someone had gotten to Gerard Mayo before the season began, before the inaugural press conference way back in January 2024, and just said, less is more, fam. Less is more.
Fitzy, is there one that stands out to you the most? Like, that you're like, oh, that was really, oh.
Well, when he called Mr. Kraft, you know, young Thundercat and young thunder, I thought I was going to throw myself into a creek.
Yeah. I wanted to get struck by lightning, if you will.
I'm
glad that ended quickly. That was weird.
Yeah, that somebody went and
like, the Patriots could be six. Yeah, they could be 16-0 right now, and I'd be like, don't call him Thundercat.
Please don't call him Thundercat ever again. Yeah, like, I cringed so hard. I literally felt my bones slide out of my body just so I could see what they look like for a second, and then crawled back in. Gah. The worst one for me, I didn't mind the soft football team. Just stay with it. Don't apologize. Don't walk it back. I don't mind, you know, I don't, the burn some cash. That's that one. I think he thought they were going to.
Yeah. And even and that, you can kind of excuse away, like, yeah. Hey, I was excited. Free agency's coming
right,
around.
Four wins, yeah. Burn some cash. I also feel like Jerod Mayo has been hung out to dry on the actions or inaction, if you will, of others. And it hasn't been in lockstep with what he said. So therefore, he's had to walk a number yeah. of things back this year.
Well,
so.
I mean, Elliot Wolf hasn't said anything publicly since, what, August?
I think, personally, I think the worst thing, it wasn't even said by Mayo. If I had to pick a least favorite Jerod Mayoism, I guess you said it, I didn't, but which was really bad. But the worst one was when Elliot Wolf said they were confident in the offensive line and thought they had done enough work to... No, you didn't. Yeah. It was...
Well, and what's concerning about that quote, Fitzy...
Are you kidding?
So if he was lying to us, okay. But if he really believed that, then I'm a little nervous because you have to pick a left tackle in the top 10 this year. You know what I mean? Like, it's one thing if he was just lying because he... Because what is he supposed to say, right? Like, hey, I think our guys kind of suck up front, you know? Or, hey, I'm a little nervous here. So if he was lying, all right, I don't love it, but I get it. But if he really believed that, ooh, that's not ideal.
Yeah, I mean, unless there's a different long play at hand that we're all frustratingly unaware of, John, that was all part of the plan, tell the crowd this, but secretly, meanwhile, we'll be doing that.
Ask KJ that. He tells me that every Tuesday and Wednesday night.
Because there's no
He's
way they thought they were
a long con.
Right, yeah, exactly. And someone's going to look at the mug and, oh, my gosh, Kaiser Sose after all. There's no way they thought they were going to be getting the first pick because how could anyone have known that Drew Locke was going to turn into Tom Brady all of a sudden and go off for 45 last Sunday.
Or even that Carolina would get a little bit better down the stretch. Yeah. Like, that Carolina team the Patriots played in the preseason, I remember we were sitting there like, hey, at least we're not those guys, right? Like, at least we're not those. And they were awful the first, what, 6-7 weeks, and then they've gotten a little bit. I mean, they still aren't good, but they've gotten a little bit better. For me, Fitzy, and it's not exactly a public Mayoism, but the Antonio Gibson, Ramondre Stevenson thing from the Chargers game.
Mm-hmm.
Telling, well, actually, I guess saying publicly, just on the wrong radio station, that he was going to start Gibson, and then telling Ross Tucker and the broadcast crew for TV he was going to start Gibson, and then starting Stevenson.
Oh,
and I know Gibson
so
got most of the carries. I get it. But after the game, Gibson's like, well, no one said that. To me, and that's just to me, the reason that's my most frustrating one or the one that bothers me the most, it's really two reasons. One, by week 17, shouldn't you kind of know better and have that right? Right? If it was week one and they had a miscommunication, I'd complain about it on here, but not nearly as much as week 17. The other thing is, though, that speaks to some sort of disconnect or dysfunction behind the scenes, whether it's Mayo didn't tell Van Pelt, or Mayo told Van Pelt and Van Pelt didn't tell Gibson and Stevenson, or he told them and they did their own thing. And I'm not trying to make accusations here, but the only way that Mayo says that on two different platforms and it happens anyway is there's some sort of breakdown or disconnect in how they're running things behind the scenes. Because, look, the press conference stuff, you and I work in the media, it matters to us. And I think it does matter, at least on some level, not nearly as much, though, as what goes on in the building and behind the scenes. And that, to me, was a little bit of evidence of, is there some sort of disconnect here behind the scenes?
Yeah, Mark Daniels joined me and Mego the other night on the show, and he had a piece earlier in the week on Jalen Polk. You know, they've done a bang-up job the last week and a half, all season long, but last couple weeks at Mass Live. Karen Garigian joined us last weekend. She had the Keon White thing from a week and a half ago. That stunk of some internal dysfunction. I can also tell you, without naming names, that I know for a fact that that ruffled a lot of feathers, and the coaches were not happy about Keon White coming out that way.
The weird part is I actually agree with Keon White.
I do,
like,
too.
Maybe, and on, if you really extrapolate out everything he
just
said.
Don't, you just don't say it. You just don't say it that way, but also sometimes we get asked, John, we can probably relate without going into greater detail. Sometimes you get asked to do things at your job that you're maybe not the best at or most comfortable with, but you have to try to take a team-first approach. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that Lions guy sucks at hosting radio. Why do they keep asking him to do that?
Fitzy for an hour and 10 minutes by himself.
Why do
my
they
God,
keep asking Chris
thinking?
Foley to produce? What's going on? You know, but look, I get what you're saying. But even the Keon White things, like he was saying, yeah, we're bad and we need to change things to be better. Like, okay. Like, what? Yes, like you do.
You yell at the fans at least.
Like, and also, too, Keon White wasn't like, oh, our coaches stink, or oh, we should fire people, or oh, you know, these guys around me aren't good enough. He was just like, hey, it's not about moral victories or consolation prizes. We're here to win, and we're not winning. And I mean, yeah, like, okay, like he's correct. And again, I didn't think what Keon White said was that bad, but I do think, to your point, it does speak to a little bit of that disconnect there.
Yep, it does. Exactly. Like, don't go, you can feel this way, just don't talk this way right now, because we already have enough bad optics, bad eyes, and bad looks on the team as well. So Mark Daniels joined us, and I was saying he had the, you know, Gregan had the Keon White thing, he had the Jalen Polk piece earlier this week, and what an absolute garbage season it's been for him. One that it basically just needs to be completely forgotten. I don't care if it was the TD that was a non-TD against the Dolphins or whatever it was that threw him for a loop.
Aaron Dobson had a much better rookie season.
Oh, smoked him. Josh Boyce had a better rookie season, for Christ's sakes.
Yeah, Chad Jackson had a better rookie season.
All of them did.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Mike, Tyquan Thornton had a better rookie season.
I'm sure David Givens did, my guy.
And also too. Bethel Johnson. They all did. All the members of the second round failed wide receivers club all had better rookie seasons than.
You know who else had a better rookie season than him?
Every other receiver drafted
Ladd
this year.
McConkey. I was just trying to put that
on a team.
Don't
for you dare.
I was just
don't
trying to put that dare. On. I'll shut up now. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, but Mark Daniels published a piece on Friday. He interviewed a bunch of players in the locker room, and they all still have Mayo's back, and they all want to see him come back. Why would Kendrick Bourne, whose place with the team may be tenuous at best, why would he be sticking his... I can understand why he'd be trying to recruit T. Higgins here. Why would he be sticking his neck out for Mayo, just like so many other players have? It's very easy to say, John, to a member of the press, at a presser, on your own IG, whatever, like, hey, whoever, you know, if he's here, great. If not, we'll roll with whoever we got. That's all you have to say. And then that tells the audience at large, okay, they know he may be going, or maybe he's not their guy, but he's also not going to throw him under the bus. No, they have come out and said he doesn't deserve all this blame. We love what he says. He's forming individual relationships. Brian Hoyer said as much on the current podcast this week. Football is all about relationships. If you blow everyone out but Mayo, how do you form relationships again? Because everyone thinks it's all just going to get blown up in a lame duck 2025. Like, so why would they all say that unless he was doing something right behind the scenes but needed to learn more and obviously just wasn't given the education, the tools, or the talent to develop whatever acumen it was that he has that convinced Kraft to make him the coach 5+ years ago?
Yeah, and look, there's two quotes from Jonathan Jones that real, and he's a guy, I think, first of all, he's my favorite player on the team, full disclosure, but he's won multiple Super Bowls. He's done some of the toughest jobs the Patriots have asked him to do over the years, played with a bunch of different quarterbacks, multiple coaching regimes now. So when he says something, I really kind of listen to it. And there's two things he said. One, and this was, I think, 2 or 3 weeks ago or so, he basically said some players have come up short and some coaches have come up short. And so for him to say that, I was like, whoa. And then when he was on the afternoon show with Andy Hart and I on Monday, I asked him, I said, hey, what needs to happen here for this to get back to the championship standard that you are used to, that you were Brady and Belichick, you were with them? And he said, first, we have to get good players in the building.
Talent. So, I heard that, and I was so glad he said that, John.
Yeah, because so Jonathan Jones looks around, and he's like, man, this is not what it's supposed to be. Like, we don't have good enough players here. These coaches need to up their game a little. And it's not all of them, too, to be clear. But, like, that's in a, when a guy like Jonathan Jones says stuff like that, I really take notice, because I think of everyone on the team, he understands more than anyone else what it takes to win at a high level.
Let's get back to the calls real quick before we catch a break and then just let, you know, cry havoc and let slip the calls of war here on WEEI. Kurt and Paulie have been waiting longest. K comes before P. Kurt in New Hampshire, how are you, buddy?
Hey, 15 Lions, how you doing? I guess my take on Mayo is, I think the biggest indictment is you just look at our defense. I guess I was under the mistaken impression that Mayo, known for his acumen in the film room as a player, all those years under Belichick, that some of the Belichick defensive guru mojo would have rubbed off. I guess I was under the mistaken impression that Mayo would know how to put together a game plan, and I think the San Diego game was probably the biggest indictment. I didn't end up watching it, but I got a lot of postmortem on it, listening to the people who know their X's and O's, and just said that Harbaugh and the Chargers absolutely just had their way with our defense.
It's
like they had the game
plan in their hands, Kurt.
Exactly. And, you know, no ability to take away any element of an opposing offense. I'm fine with, you know, bringing in Mayo and letting him delegate to AVP on the offense, no problem. You know, I had high hopes for, you know, apparently, you know, listening to the players, always a great communicator. We have his back. But it takes more than that to be a head coach. And that's, to me, the biggest indictment is we need somebody who knows a little bit about X's and O's, or we're just not going to go anywhere.
Appreciate the call, Kurt. Thanks for hanging in there, my friend. His line is open at 617-779-7937. John, let's get to break so we can share a couple other nuggets, get into how and the why they cannot win that game tomorrow. A few other things, try to clean up the calls. They've been coming in fast and furious and ready, steady, Freddy, all show long. I'm going to tag out at 2. Mego will be here with you. It's a great time to be listening to the WEEI Weekend All-Stars, now featuring Fitzy and Shime with 100% extra Tom C as the producer on EEI. That was the call on the NFL Network with Chris Rose and our pal, friend of the station, Ross Tucker, as Drake May in the first quarter foolishly tried to extend a play, stayed in bounds and got whacked upside the head, as he called it. As he said, he got his bell rung, John. And that's one of the things I would like to see, whoever it is, if it is AVP, if it's some other offensive coordinator, quarterbacks coach, whatever, work with Drake May on. Live to see another day. Do not try to extend those plays. Also, maybe we could work on the depth in the pocket as well sometimes, but that's one of those things I'd like to see somebody work with Drake May and clean up. But then again, we have very few complaints, very few notes. Not a lot in the note session for Drake May this season, John, as he's one of the guys that has actually improved this season. But we play that audio because as we head into tomorrow's game, I'll be there, obviously. I'll be on the Six Rings postgame show with Hart. Maybe we'll get a John Lyons check-in because we'll be on the full 4 to 7:30 tomorrow.
Ooh, maybe you will.
I hope so. You'll have
John
notes,
in the car.
I imagine.
It'll be me.
Johnny in the car. Johnny from Brockton. Why would you play Drake May tomorrow? All the rationale, all the things I've heard, you have a not just built-in excuse, you have a legitimate rationale. Well, his hand has bothered him this week. He got his bell rung last week. Our offensive line is the worst in the NFL, as you may have read yesterday in Mike Reese's long explanatory, here's what went wrong, why, and how this year, piece on ESPN.com. You think my Sunday 7 is long? Holy smokes, and tomorrow's is a chunky one, to say the least. Reese went
technical
in at
term
length.
Is thick with two C's,
to say the least. Patriots are 27th in the league in generating pressure. They have they're worst in sacks. And we have also, get ready for this, everybody, the worst pass blocking offensive line in the league. Yeah, tell me something I don't know, Fitz. And statistically, the worst run blocking line in the league. So all those reasons, plus the bell ring, the hand, the line, the freezing cold, the game is meaningless, and you really will benefit significantly from losing. The hell would you play May for tomorrow?
I would, and I would start him, though, but I would only play him for a half or so, with the caveat being if he's actually healthy. Like, if this hand thing is real or his head still doesn't feel quite right from last Saturday, then I'm not playing him. But my fear, Fitzy, and this is something I've talked about with you, I've talked about all year with other people, is a lot of the things they've done over the last 2.5-3 years are things that losing organizations do. And the last thing I want is for them to become fully infected with loser DNA. And it feels like they're just about there. So if you, and I'm not saying you even have to win the game. Can you start May, play him for a half, be competitive, and then in the second half, take your foot off the gas? You still lose, but you're competitive. You get the number one pick. That's what I want to, because I think if you just sit him down and basically openly are saying, we want to lose, I think that is just, again, a little tiny piece more of that loser mentality, that loser DNA, which I've just seen far, far too much of over the last year and a half.
I agree with you, John. And I've been called hypocritical on social media for basically begging the Patriots not to win this game on Sunday, and having said prior to this season, or rather in this season and prior to it as well, that losing begets losing, and that's how you create a losing culture. And if you want to,
like,
be
how many times have the Cleveland Browns lost their last game of the year to get a top two or three pick? Like, I just
they've just lost. Period.
No, but you know what I mean? Like, they're like, oh, we lose this game and we'll get the number one pick or the number three pick. And it's just that stuff snowballs into itself. And that's how you just become a loser franchise.
I know. Oh my God. But when you are so bereft, and back to the calls in a second here, but when you are so bereft of elite talent and you have, you could argue you need a almost an entirely new offensive line. You need at least 50% new wide receiver room. You need two new cornerbacks. You need defensive line assistance. You need another. You need a younger linebacker to prepare to take over in case Juwan Bentley starts seeing diminished returns after missing a whole season with a torn pectoral. You need an actual free safety, for the love of God. Enough with the big, strong box safeties. We need a legitimate free safety. There's been no D-Mac since there was no more D-Mac. You need a running back with top-end speed who can threaten the defense at every level and not just be a punisher or a wide receiver miscast as a running back. There's so much this team needs. And you could just simply argue, well, we needed to see what Joe Milton could do because we're not sure if we want to spend $8 million on Jacoby Brissett or the like next year. Just saying.
Well, you can make the case, Fitzy. Every single position group on this team is a need, because even quarterback, you don't know who your backup is. Now, maybe it could be Milton, and I don't think it'll be Brissett, but maybe they'll bring in a different vet for a year. But you could honestly make the case that every single position group on that team could use at least one other player, if not more.
Back to the phones we go. He's been hanging. He's ready to rock and roll. Paulie's in Dedham. What's up, Paulie?
Happy New Year, lads.
And to you as
John,
well, friend.
John, you're out of your mind. John, I love you, but you're reaching, my good brother. You're reaching. All you want to do, you want to run this as a preseason game. You want to end a good note, looking to have May end the season on a good note. You tell him, Drake, I'm going to give you two shots at having one rhythmic drive. If you can do it for me on the first drive, you got the rest of the year off. That's it. You don't take any chances and run him out there for the entire half. You give him two shots, have one rhythmic drive, and then you put Joe Milton in and Brissett Faxon for the rest of the game. Okay. Number two, you move Mayo upstairs. He's got a better shot at becoming the next Ozzie Newsome as he does become the next Mike Tomlin. He doesn't coach him hard enough. He'll tell them that hard work works, but he just doesn't coach them. They don't get the idea with him that Vrabel will keep them on their toes all the time. Mayo provides that bridge for Vrabel and Josh McDaniels, who'll be your offensive coordinator, to the front office. Mayo becomes, and he's a more of an upper-level management type anyway. Well-spoken, highly intelligent, knows the players. Elliot Wolf can guide him through the process as the assistant GM, Gerard, and Vrabel will come into the room and they'll figure it out. You need to build your coaching staff, your scouting staff is what you need to do. You got to dismiss Elgrow. You got to bring in an ace that knows how to readily identify skill position talent. And you got to bring in an ace that knows how to readily identify line play talent. Covington can stay. He could go back to the defensive line. It was a huge mistake not keeping Steve here, because Mayo's had to try to do everything at the same time. That was dumb. And it's the only real mistake I've seen him make all year. He's coaching by who he is, okay? That's why they love him and they respect him. He's an easygoing guy. He's going to hold your feet to the fire when he feels it's necessary, but he's not that hot-ass, edgy coach all the time. He's going to have you on your toes all the time, playing the way you're being coached. That's Vrabel. You bring in McDaniels, and you throw Steve on the table to Mike. You say, Mike, what do you think? What do you say we bring back Steve? What do you
zero
think?
Chance you'd be able to bring him back? I'm going to let you go. Paulie, thank you very much for the call, buddy. I appreciate it very much. But we got a lot of calls we got to get to, and we're up against a break in a couple of minutes. No chance Steve Belichick is coming back. He's not going to want to return to the pros now that he's agreed. Can't be yo-yoing the family all over the place. He's down in Chapel Bill right now. As a matter of fact, as I read who was it, Jonathan Jones's piece from CBS Sports today, John Jones saying that there could even be some attrition from the Patriots coaching staff down to good old Chapel Bill this offseason, Johnny, and that wouldn't be a surprise. I'm sure you and Mego can unpack that a little bit.
Oh, we will. Guys, yeah. Maybe they'll bring Fitzy down to do the in-game entertainment. Peel you away.
They're going to put me on the Jumbotron. Yeah. What's the name of the stadium?
Chapel again? Fitzy.
Chapel
yeah.
Fitz.
Sure. Yeah, Chapel Fitz. All right, I'm in.
Let's see. We got time maybe for one or two more calls, and then it's going to be it's going to be the Lions and Mego Spectacular. Paul's on Cape Cod. Hello, Paul. How are you?
Hey, how's it going, fellas?
What's up, buddy?
You know, I've been on the fence all year with whether or not they should bring Mayo back, and then last week he did something that I think is egregious, and he has to go to put that kid back out there after getting hit like that. There's a thing called second impact syndrome. If you get another one within the same time frame, it's 30% fatal. There's no chance he should have been on the field, and he shouldn't be on the field this week either. And it's going to be typical Patriots. I mean, they're going to win, and it's bad that they're going to, but they will, because that's what they do. And it's dumb, because if they lose, they're going to get an extra impact player, because you know somebody will give them their first and second rounder for that pick. So it's another impact player that they won't get. They absolutely have to lose, and I'm expecting them to win. I want to call Vegas and put money down, because it's what's not right for them. It's unbelievable.
Thank you, Paul. I appreciate the call, and stay warm and watch out for that wind on the Cape right now. Maybe drive by and check out my Sea Shack if you get a chance. Look, they're going to rely on John. They're going to lean into and rely on medical science, the doctors. He's been cleared by independent neurologists. The league said it's okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm not blaming Mayo for. The dude clears protocol. I'm not going to.
No, I wouldn't have blamed him for that. I wouldn't blame him for starting him tomorrow as well. I do like what Paulie said at the beginning of his call/mini podcast, that you can put him out for a series or two. That's all. If you want to keep a streak going, or if you want to let him start his own streak and you want to get him a couple more reps again before you wrap the season and then take a full exam of what he's done and how you can improve him and obviously the team, more importantly, in the offseason, I'm fine with that. However, letting him play the whole game tomorrow, I think it's just unnecessary. I think it's just,
yeah.
Get a look at, get,
I,
Joe
I mean,
Milton
I think
at least
a
didn't
first
take
half
all
situation. Yeah.
He didn't take all scout reps this week. Like, he did take some meaningful reps. So I'm expecting to see Joe Milton at one point tomorrow. All right. Now, see, we've had a lot of anti-Mayo calls. There have been a couple of positive Mayo, and by positive Mayo, I mean defending Mayo or at least arguing on his behalf. Last call before I go. Dennis has been hanging on him for a while. He would like to speak in defense of Jerod Mayo. Good luck, Dennis.
Thank you, guys. Happy New Year.
To you as well, sir.
Only thing I think is egregious is what everybody is saying about Mayo. This problem with the Patriots has started from years and years ago. The Patriots, Robert Kraft and the Kraft family are spoiled. They were spoiled by Brady and all the things that came with. And they haven't spent money, and they won't either. And that's why they have Jerod Mayo there as the coach and Elliott Wolf as the GM, because they don't want to spend any money, and they won't. Tom Brady and Belichick allowed them to win all those years. Tom Brady was the best player in the league, MVP, and where was he on the pay scale? Right in the middle of the road. There were 10, 11, 12 quarterbacks that were higher paid than him. Where was their salary cap overall with the rest of the league as they were winning Super Bowls? Somewhere in the middle. Mm-hmm. Same thing every single year. Anytime they signed somebody that was significant, it was somebody off the scrap heap, a project, something like a Randy Moss, somebody who couldn't get along anywhere else. Let's put him into the system and see how it goes. That's what they're going to try to do. It'll never happen again. They don't have a guy like Brady who's going to decide he's going to take less money for the sake of the team. This has nothing to do with Jerod Mayo. The Patriots haven't scored over 30 points in 46 games. Mayo's been the coach for 16 games, whatever that is. And at the end of the day, everybody preseason was talking about how the Patriots have no weapons, not on either side of the ball. You can count on your hand good players that this team has. And that was from the beginning of the season. And they ended up getting rid of two or three of them as the season goes on. And we're going to talk about Jerod Mayo not being able to coach this team? Who could? Don't talk to me about Vrabel. Vrabel couldn't do it in Tennessee either. This makes no sense. Nobody wants to point the finger at the Crafts. Why not? They benefited from Brady year after year after year. Their franchise went from one of the middle-of-the-road value franchises to one of the highest-value franchises in sports. And they don't want to shoot the lock off their wallet. That's where everybody should be pointing the fingers. Those guys get away with murder. It's time to pay some players. Get some free agents to come in here. Nobody wants to come in because they know they don't pay. That's what it boils down to. Don't talk about T. Higgins. He's not coming here. You know, the only thing we have going for us right now is Drake May. And that landed on their laps because they stunk for 3-4 years in a row. And they plan on stinking this year so they can get a better pick.
Let's not talk about
Gerard Mayo and how he made mistakes on the field. Don't you think they talked about this in the front office? Don't you think there's game plans and things like that, 3- and 5-year plans? Every business has have them.
For sure, Dennis. I got to wrap the call because we're over the hour mark. And
a little
I got
revisionist history there. Too.
Yeah, if he had stopped about 30 seconds prior, I would have said, okay, you can drop the mic, or at least you can say.
Made some good points,
make some good points as well. All right, so it's just a whisker after 2. John, Mego should be on her way in momentarily. Thank you, John, for coming in for hour number 2 and extending your stint here as part of the WEEI Saturday.
Always a pleasure to be on with Nick Fitzy Stevens, the man who has multiple beers and multiple breweries named after him.
And always a pleasure to warm things up in the Lion's Den. And I know Mego and you will put on a hell of a show the rest of the way. I'm looking forward to hearing you guys as well the rest of the day. I got some youth basketball to go help out and work on for a little bit now. I will talk to you all tomorrow on the Six Rings postgame show live here on WEEI and throughout our affiliates. As soon as the game ends, Hart and I will be with you until 7:30 tomorrow night. Hopefully we'll hear from Johnny. We'll hear from Mego. We'll get a final Drake May report card from Shime Time himself. And I can't believe I say this. I hope a best foot and effort is put forth in defeat tomorrow, because I truly believe that if they are all about doing what's in the best interest of the football team, is what will benefit this football team the most. But you guys can continue the debate. Please feel free to call in to John Lyons and Miss Megan Ottolini, the legend of Mego, at 617-779-7937. Mego and Lyons rolls on here as part of WEEI Saturday. Don't go anywhere.